Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Happy Halloween from the Kudzu Vine. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
And Catherine, welcome back.
Welcome back. I'm glad to be back. I want to say that I'm calling in from East Cobb County in Georgia this evening. So
now,
I'm
you
not in
doing,
Atlanta. I'm deep in the Republican hood.
Yes, and is this a live remote? Like, are you going to be? Are people going to be saying trick or treat? You're going to be handing out candy during the show?
I don't think so. I think my friend Juliana is going to take care of the trick or treaters tonight. So.
Okay, and then and I know, I don't know about other places, but I know kind of in Rome it was kind of a thing where pretty much everybody trick or treated last night. I guess we were like New Orleans. Apparently, out in there, they had decided to make Halloween on Saturday. For football purposes, but ours was just, I don't know what. But it means that it's the Kudzu Vines free, so I won't have any door ringing either. Tim, Somerville good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Somerville's great. They did all the stuff last night, so there'll be nobody bothering me tonight on the trick-or-treaters. So
we're all set. Now, tonight we're going to be having some guests. In the second half hour, Anastasia Oppa is going to call in live from Florida, still one of the real hotbeds of Southern politics where these races can go either way. I guess the governor's race one way or the other and the Senate race theoretically any of three ways. And then probably just in a few minutes, Matt Roberts of Henry County House District 109 is going to call in with us and talk about his campaign and his opponent and everything else. But in the meantime, I was absolutely appalled. I think this happened right around the time we probably were off the show. But we didn't get a chance to discuss it, and that was in Kentucky after a debate. Rand Paul's supporter, actually several of them, pushed the lady to the ground and then stepped on her. Catherine, did you see this video, and what are your thoughts on it?
I did not see the video, but I read about it, and it like you said, it's just shocking and horrifying that and then I guess somebody responded by saying, I think Rand Paul said it was a setup. I'm like, well, there's a video. It can't really be a setup. I think that it's just an example of how ridiculous all of this divisive behavior has become. And it's really quite sad it's very disappointing that people respond so violently to people who oppose, with whom they oppose. It's very sad.
Yeah, and by setup, now the thing I find kind of interesting about that is to be a setup, it would not only have to be the lady, but it would have to be several people dressed as Rand Paul supporters in the midst of, I'm assuming, some real Rand Paul supporters, you know, according to this theory, and those people did nothing to intervene. Or was this like a 50-person elaborate setup that they're, supposing, if you will?
Yeah, I don't know what the explanation was.
Well,
I tell you what, I think the Linda McMahon campaign would probably say that this was a little hard to orchestrate. And if you're not familiar, she's the president of the World Wrestling Federation. So this seems pretty far-fetched. Tim, you saw the video,
I saw the video. By setup, I guess some people are saying that Lauren Bell, who was the person involved, actually came there and started this thing. She was a MoveOn.org volunteer. She was wearing a blonde wig and the whole get-up. And they knew she was there and who she was, and she was going to try to approach Rand Paul as he was headed to his vehicle and give him some mock award from some fictional company, which they have done to other politicians. Ha ha, everybody has a little life and takes a few pictures and they go on about their business. And one of the county coordinators for Mr. Paul was the fellow who actually took his foot and pretty much just stomped down on her head. He claimed he didn't do it, claimed it was her shoulder, but the video clearly showed it was her head, and it was like three or four big guys grabbed this little 115-pound gal and threw her to the ground and then pushed her down like that. It was pretty sad to see. Now, I noticed the conservative blogosphere went crazy about this Kenneth Gladney. You remember last year? You remember him at the Russ Carnahan town hall meeting in Missouri? This guy claimed that a bunch of union thugs took him down, but the quote main thug was seen in the video holding his own shoulder, and this thug turned out, by the way, to be a preacher. And you talk about setup. The world was screaming that was a setup. But they try to compare this to that.
Go ahead, Tim.
No, it just didn't. It rang kind of hollow with me. There's no way to explain this off, is what I'm saying.
Well, and one big thing I'd like to ask these guys is, you say it was the shoulder, not the back, not the head. What part of the woman would be okay to step on? That's my
biggest
question. But that's really. There's just no class that we could go on for half the show about this.
Yeah,
that claimed, how
claimed
it was.
He put his put his foot down because his back was hurting him and he couldn't lean over and hold her down. Oh, that's great.
Well, you know, he's demanding an apology from her.
That's rich.
Okay, yeah, that's
No, he has.
We could keep discussing this, but I think our first guest is joining us, running for State House in Henry County, Matt Roberts. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, sir. Good to be with you.
Yes. Well, Matt, give us a little about your background and who you are.
Just tell folks right quickly, I was born in East Point and lived in Forest Park with my family till we was about nine, and then relocated to Stockbridge in Henry County in 1985, where I've been since then. Local boy, went to Stockbridge High School, class of 94, commuted to Atlanta for 6 years, going to Georgia State University on the Hope Scholarship, and was blessed enough to get into UGA Law and went to law school up in Georgia and came back home and started practicing criminal defense and family law right here in McDonough. Earlier this year, in terms of how I got in the race, I've done some political stuff in the past in terms of working with the party, been a national delegate to the 2000 convention, and I had some folks approach me largely out of concern about who the incumbent is and what sort of effectiveness he doesn't have. And once I got to looking at the race, you know, I always figured if I was asked to step up and serve the people that I would, you know, humbly take that opportunity and try to go out there and do the best I could with it.
So you decided to jump into this race because of the incumbent, and I think there's been many writings of articles, TV investigative reporting. What are some of those things that have been going on, Mr. Davis?
To kind of give you the quick and dirty version of it is that the Henry County received $6.5 million grant from the Neighborhood Stabilization Program out of the federal government. And the state, through the Department of Community Affairs, administers money for the feds. Well, Henry County signed contracts with several companies to go out and buy, rehab, foreclosed homes to try to keep, you know, certain neighborhoods from suffering even more than we have in Henry County in the past couple of years. And when they submit billing back to the state saying we spent this money from the county, we need to get reimbursed, they came back and said there were two companies at issue that had conflicts of interest. And one involved the incumbent, Steve Davis. Apparently he was being used as an asset manager by this company. I believe it was Henry NSP LLC. And I've even seen some of the sales and contracts where he was signing as the broker. Now, under the federal conflict of interest rules, it says no elected official and no brokers, you know, in essence, can be within 10 feet of this. They can't benefit from it. They can't derive any profit, and they can't have any say-so over the direction and those types of things. So the county is at this point has asked Mr. Davis to pay back the $25,000 that they can't get reimbursed from the state because he shouldn't have even have been into the program. And at this point in time, it's my understanding that, you know, they've gave him a final notice, and you know, it's going to be a toss-up between do the taxpayers have to eat this one, or are we going to have to spend even more money and have the county sue him to try to recover the funds.
Yes, and I guess making it even – oh, go ahead.
Well, and interestingly enough, I mean, Mr. Davis is a self-described Tea Party Republican, so the fact that he would have anything to do with any federal stimulus money really sort of boggles my mind. I mean, this is funds set up to help keep Henry County from suffering further than in the foreclosure crisis, and we've been hit particularly hard, you know, on the south side of Atlanta. And, you know, just – to not be able to read the basic rules and see that this isn't something that you should be involved with, number one, or number two, how do elected officials, you know, keep getting into these situations where they can basically profit off the position as an elected official?
Yes, and I guess making this worse, when I saw the 46 investigative report, they talked about the state senator in Henry County, John Lunsford, actually took some of the money too. But he was willing to pay it back after it was shown. What's the difference with Mr. Davis?
Well, my understanding is that, and I haven't really researched the information on Mr. Lunsford's side. Obviously, that came out along with Mr. Davis' story. But it's my understanding that Mr. Lunsford told the county, you know, if y'all don't get reimbursed, I will pay the money back. And, of course, Mr. Davis took a completely different track on that. You know, this is a man who, you know, says that, you know, he knows all that he needs to know about ethics, and we really don't need stronger ethics laws. But yet, it seems to me that we probably need to have a lot more sunshine and a lot more restrictions in terms of what type of benefit, you know, an elected official can make while they're in office, because I think there should be zero. The whole point is to go in there and serve the people truthfully, honestly, to the best of your ability, and this is not some type of a stepping stone, you know, to make your portfolio or your checkbook look bigger, basically, in my opinion.
Yes. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pass this around to some my co-hosts for some more questions. Tim,
okay.
What are some of your questions for Matt?
Yes, sir. One thing I've been noticing in reading about Henry County, that it appears to, over the last couple of election cycles, be trending Democratic. Could you tell us why that is?
I think a lot of it has just been the demographic shifts that have been going on within the state. Henry County for 10 or 15 years has been one of the fastest growing counties in the entire nation. So we've just had a huge influx of all different types of people, you know, from all over Atlanta, all over the country, all over the Southeast. And as for myself, particularly a lot of people from Clayton County moved to Henry, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s when the economy was going so strong here. The district that I'm in has a Democratic performance rating of about 42%, and it's got one of the highest increases every election cycle, and that's largely due to the demographic changes that are going on in the northern part of the county. And I also suspect that, you know, what I've seen in this election cycle is there are a great number of people who are willing to work locally at the candidate as opposed to just sorting us into whatever, you know, ideological category they think we might be in, and they're trying to find the right people to do the right job to make sure that we recover well and keep that level of economic development and improvement in quality of life going on for our citizens. But a lot of it's just been demographic shifts and combined with our growth.
Okay, and one more question, and this is about Steve Davis. Read a lot of stuff about him, and some of the criticisms of him is that he has really failed to work closely with local elected officials there in Henry County. Is that pretty much the way you folks feel down in Henry County?
That seems to be an overwhelming consensus. If you take the passage of the tax allocation district legislation for Henry County as an example, Mr. Davis either failed to show up to vote for it or was opposed to it, and Chairwoman Mathis even had to hire a consultant to help get that legislation passed for the county commission because it was something that they wanted. And I've even, you know, Mr. Davis, I understand from some folks, is indicating now that he approves of these things, but, you know, I saw him in an interview say that this is just simply government sponsorship of private development, which, if you know anything about the TAD program, it's completely wrong. I've had people say that, you know, sometimes the school board and the county commission will agree to something 5-5, they'll have unanimous decision, and then Mr. Davis, you know, swoops in and starts saying, well, let me do this or let's do that, you know, as opposed to, you know, taking the unanimity of his local officials and carrying that up and trying to get that done on behalf of them without meddling in their affairs just because he happens to be able to carry that local legislation up to the Capitol for him. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago it came to light that he's running, his 21-year-old son is running for school board in the 5th District down here in Henry County against a guy named Rodney Christopher. And there was a debate between Ryan Davis and Rodney Christopher, and Ryan didn't show up. And apparently Steve debated Mr. Christopher on his son's behalf. And,
goodness.
You know, which is amazing in and of itself. But when CBS News was asking him about this, you know, to paraphrase him, his basic quote was, you know, it was probably unfair that it happened, but sometimes life just isn't fair. And I think the fact that you see what he owes the county now really lets people know just exactly where his ethics and where his stance on in terms of what he should be doing as a public servant. And it appears to be to benefit himself as opposed to focusing on the core priorities that we need to, you know, put in place in Henry County to make sure that we continue growth and don't wind up, you know, like the state in general is worried about with, you know, business and economic development going to North Carolina or Dallas or other places.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Catherine?
Well, thank you very much for being on with us tonight. My name is Catherine. I am a blogger on Blog for Democracy, and I'm calling in tonight, unusually, from Cobb County. Usually I'm in Fulton. I noticed that one of the things you mentioned on your website is an important issue, which is, of course, an important issue to all of us in Metro Atlanta, is transportation. And I wonder what kind of ideas you have to solve some of those transportation problems. I have driven down to Henry County in rush hour, and I can attest to the awfulness of it.
Yeah, it's not quite as bad as Gwinnett County, but we certainly need some options. One of the things that we've seen recently is the establishment of larger park and ride share locations, which we just got a large one in Stockbridge, and I think we need to get some more of those going because it's packed out every day. There are still some highway projects in Henry County that need to be worked on. County roads, such as Highway 42, and the extension of the Jodico Road needs to be widened, the overpass over 75. The county's been doing a pretty good job in terms of getting arteries opened up in the county to try to give us some leeway, but there seems to be a consensus, at least in terms of the business community that I speak with down here, that the light rail program proposal that would go through Hampton as part of the Making Atlanta line is something that we need to seriously be looking at, and I've even seen a number of other Republican legislators in this area, you know, support that idea, you know, as a way to bring economic development. Well, I mean, Andy Welch, who's running in District 110, said at the Henry Chamber Forum that it's something that ought to be seriously considered and looked at. And from what everybody I've ever talked to about it says that, you know, Mr. Davis is 100% against it, and it ain't going nowhere as long as he's in office. You know, I certainly don't want to bring a subway system to Henry County, but, you know, if it's something that will protect the character of the community and provide an option for people, as well as a chance to do some economic development in the county, I think it would potentially be a good idea for us. You know, so those are the types of things. You know, we're not a community set up with a lot of bike trails and things like that, but I even think maybe trying to get some HOV lane extensions through the county could benefit us as well. But I think in the bottom line is about 70%, give or take, of our community has to leave the county to work. And I think until we can start getting some jobs in Henry County to where people don't have to drive so far, you know, it's going to continue to be a challenge for us.
I think that's great. I think that while roads are an easy and roads and highways are an easy and, you know, obviously been a very viable solution throughout the development of the automobile in this country, I think that the light rail and other options are really going to be essential as we move forward because of all kinds of things, pollution, space, all those things. So I'm glad to hear that you're supporting that. I think it's an excellent idea. What other issues, I know, you know, jobs and education, of course, but
right.
What are there any other issues that you're hearing from people that are really important to them that you'll take with you to the Capitol and try to work on?
Well, certainly, you know, on the issue of education, you know, Hunter County is not unusual. Most counties have had to increase the amount of funding that they're having to put up because the state started cutting their funding for the counties as far back as 2002. You know, I think we need a legislator who's going to be aggressive at trying to switch that back in the other direction so that we're not spending so much of our local money covering up something that the state ought to be doing under its obligations on the Constitution. I'd also like to be able to work with the business community and the chamber and the county commissioners to help make sure we do things like get the there's a proposal to bring an fiber optic cable system through the county so we can attract business centers and possibly headquarters of businesses as opposed to just warehouses, which are a very important part of our business structure in the county. But those are the types of things that, you know, I think we need to make sure we're looking 10, 15, 20 years down the line trying to, you know, ascertain what are the best policies we can put in place now that are going to attract jobs, build good schools, people can move freely, and that this will be the place people want to come, do business, and live in and spend their money in, hopefully. You know, because we've suffered terribly losing one of the races down at the Atlanta Motor Speedway, so Henry County's got to look aggressively at finding some ways to replace that lost revenue that we're going to experience next year, as well as the running out of the federal stimulus money.
I always like to ask just this one more question.
Yeah,
what
go
are
ahead.
You doing, pardon?
I said go ahead.
Okay. What are you, how's your campaign going, and what kind of activities do you have for the next, what have we got, like 48 hours? What kind of get out the vote things are you doing? Are you working with the coordinating campaign? You know, what's going on in the district in these last 2 days?
Well, there's been a number of things going on, not necessarily all in a coordinated fashion. I know that Organizing for America has been working diligently in Clayton and in Henry counties trying to turn out the vote. The Henry County Party is going to have voter protection people on Tuesday. My campaign is continuing to go door to door, you know, get up yard signs, try as many people in the community as possible, and try to get our message out. And we're expecting to do a little bit of that tomorrow to try to let people know what's been going on with Steve Davis, where are we at right now, and that they do have an option if they'll just look closely at, you know, his record of claiming not to be a tax raiser and voting to raise property taxes versus, you know, a young local boy who might be running as a Democrat but wants to do nothing but bring sound policy to the county and cut through, you know, the craziness that basically goes on both sides, because, you know, we're suffering right now as a county, and we need to make sure that, you know, people know that, you know, there's somebody from around here who's been around here for years and years and years, and I've certainly lived a lot of the same experiences as most people in the county. So we're just trying to wave signs, knock on doors, pass out flyers, and literally do everything we can think of in these closing, you know, moments to try to get the word out and get people to the polls. And certainly if anybody needs a ride to the polls or anything of that nature, they can contact our campaign, and we'll be more than happy to try to do everything we can for them.
Well, that sounds great. Okay, David, that's all I got.
Well, final question, Matt. If someone's heard you tonight and they'd like to help you in whatever way they can, what are some ways they could find out more?
The two best places to find information on us are on the website. It's www.mattrobertsforstatehouse.com. You can also visit our Facebook page at Matt Roberts for State House. You can get to the Facebook page through the website, but our telephone number and all that, and certainly if anybody's got any amount of money they want to contribute to help us get the word out, or knows anybody in central Henry County that they can reach out to. And if I need to talk to anybody, just call us, let us know, send us a message, and we'll be more than happy to get out there and reach out and talk to the voters.
Yes, well, Matt, thanks for being on the show, and good luck on Tuesday night.
All right, thanks, y'all. I appreciate being with you, and tell everybody to go vote.
Glad to have you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. Well, good to have Matt on, and kind of, you know, just another local House race in the midst of all these federal races and statewide races that have captured our attention. But all politics is local in a lot of ways, so I'd like to get back to that. Well, I guess looking at some other races before we get into Florida talk deep, we talked a little bit about Kentucky. Let's talk for a second about Texas, and then we'll probably talk a whole bunch of Georgia and maybe a few other things. In Texas, we had heard how unpopular Rick Perry was and how what a good candidate Bill White was. And, you know, there have been predictions. I know Martin Frost, who's a pretty good prognosticator, I mean pretty much a realist on chances, even though he's a Democrat, he had said on Politico that he thought the one big upset on Tuesday night was going to be the Texas governor's race. And just the latest polls, White has really fizzled. He's under 40%. Is this the fact that Perry's doing better, White's doing worse and fizzled, or is it just Texas being Texas? Catherine, what do you think?
I haven't looked. I'd be interested to see how much money the guys have. I suspect Rick Perry has a lot more money than White, and he's probably
but White's well funded. I mean, this is not a Jim DeMint, Alvin Green race by any means. I mean, White's produced real commercials and had a real campaign, so it's not
well,
all
then,
money.
Then I guess it's Texas being Texas.
Yeah, I was just pretty shocked at how fast this thing's faded. Tim, what's your take on it?
Well, look. There has not been, even though it's been a little closer than it is right now, there hasn't even been a poll that showed this race tied since about the third week in June. Perry right now is running about 10 points up if you average all the polls together, 51-41, and that gap seems to be widening a little bit. I think we got a 12-point race on election, and I think it simply comes down to this, David. Right candidate, wrong year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. But, you know, Tim, you said, hey, it hadn't been tied since, and the race had been a single-digit race just a few weeks ago. I mean, I contrast right. that to Georgia, where I don't know that since Nathan Deal's been the nominee, has Roy Barnes even had a tied poll. You know, 3 weeks ago when we had Matt from the Burn Orange Report, Texas was a more competitive race at that point than Georgia. And now
right.
we're looking at Georgia being a 7-point race, and Nathan Deal can't get over 50. Whereas Rick Perry, who everybody knows has, it's not like people are forming a new opinion of Rick Perry. I just think that for some reason, I mean, it just seems weird that so many voters in Texas that, you know, were not going to move to Rick Perry just all of a sudden did for, I mean, seemingly no reason. I hadn't seen anything in this race that would make it move. I hadn't heard any news stories out there. Either one of y'all?
No.
I mean, you know, the only thing that came out was around the time we had Matt was the thing about Rick Perry spending all the money on the excessive living somewhere else instead of fixing the governor's mansion and making it fall into disrepair. If anything, you think that would make Perry go down? I mean, you don't see any way it could make him more popular.
I still think it might be indicative of what's going on nationally, David. I've seen a few races in recent days that had seemed to be tightening, suddenly turning and going the other way. And this is kind of it has all the hallmarks of a wave. I hate to say that, but it does. And those don't stop at state lines. I really think I'm going to go with what I said to start with, and that is we had the right candidate, the best candidate we could have run in this race. And heaven knows I wish it had been 2 years ago instead of this year. I believe we'd have won the thing.
Well, and Tim, that brings up a point. You said this is a national thing. And then, of course, what does the Texas governor's race have to do with national politics, irregardless how you feel? And that brings up a Roy Barnes ad, and I wish this was one of those cases where I wish an audio clip. I heard it yesterday on the Georgia Bulldog game. Roy Barnes, it's him speaking, and he says, you know, a lot of Republicans in the state want to make this race about President Obama. But I hadn't seen him anywhere out of campaign, and I'm paraphrasing. He talks about truck stops and general stores and very folksy places. He said, I've seen him on TV. Know who he is, but hadn't seen him on the trail. Now, of course, there was one event that the governor had plans elsewhere. But, you know, but then he said, this is about Georgia. And he was trying to make this point that I'm sure that Bill White's trying to make. Why are voters in all these states for governor's races voting on national politics? And, Tim, I can feel you want to answer that question. Go ahead.
You darn right I want to answer it because it works. It works. Yeah. There was a mailer sent out this weekend by the Deal or by the Republican Governors Association on behalf of Deal, and it had a picture of Obama and Barnes on the mailer. You know, this thing has – they have made this a referendum on President Obama down to the local level. I mean, you got a state rep there in Floyd County talking about her opponent saying – you know, we don't want to send another big spending liberal to Atlanta. And with a wink, she says, you know what we've seen in Washington. You know, so, yeah, they're doing it because they feel that it's working. And Perry was one of the very first ones to seize on this Tea Party thing, talking about secession and stuff like that. You know, so.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that it works. My question is, how can it work? Catherine, tell me, how does this work?
I don't understand it. I think a lot of it has to do with people. I mean, I think people are frustrated. They're worried about the future, and they hear all this stuff that most of the news that we get about politics is from Washington. I think the fact that our legislature is you know, takes place at a time that's not during campaign season, so we don't see what they're doing except, you know, for the 3 months that they're in session. I think there's a lot of things that play into it, but I think a big piece of it is that people are not engaged in the politics that affect them the most, which is local and state politics. And they think that the national agenda is has a major effect on local and regional and state politics when it really doesn't. And but
yeah,
I think that's a fault. I think that it's a combination of not very good messaging, both from the party and from other organizations, and from the legislature, from you know the actual government, and you know, I hate to use the old, you know, that it's the media has some role in it too, but you know, all these ethical complaints and scandal, you know, allegations don't really matter to the guy who's trying to get a job or trying to keep his two
jobs.
You know, I mean, they might affect me, like I might. Well, no, they don't affect me because I'm not going to vote for the guys anyway. But they might work on some people, but I don't think they have the reach that we all wish they would.
David, 3/4 of the American people know somebody that lost their job during this recession. And as a result, they are angry. And they're going to turn their anger toward the government. Right now, the government to them is the party in power, and that's the Democratic Party. I tell you what, if I'm a Republican running for dog catcher in this country right now, I'm going to run against Washington because until proven otherwise, it's a winning formula, right?
But, yeah, and we're about to get into Florida talk, but I'm going to have the last word on this. So what y'all are telling me is that in the state of Georgia, we may get back to Georgia, The voters of Georgia, a lot of them are looking, because they want people, you know, they're worried about job losses, they're going to elect and vote for a guy that doesn't have the business acumen to run a lemonade stand over a guy that actually knew how to bring jobs once and obviously looks like he can do it again. That's what you're telling me, but I'm going to go ahead and switch this thing over. I believe Anastasia Oppa's with us. Oppa?
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Doing good. How's things in Florida?
It's going fantastic, and I obviously want to say hello to all the other hosts that are on with you. Hey, Tim, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, Tim and Catherine both here on this Halloween night. Well, thanks for taking that little trick-or-treating time on this evening to talk to us about Florida politics. And one race we got to know about, because it seems like the one big race that could go from Republican to Democrat is the Florida governor's race. How's that thing looking?
Well, the Florida's governor's race definitely has been very, very interesting, and we have some a fantastic, I should say, Democratic candidate there, Alex Fink, who has the kind of experience that we need to get our state straight. She's got a very, very long list of people here running. Obviously, the Republican is Rick Scott, and his running mate is Jennifer Carroll. Alex Fink is running with a running mate named Rod Smith. I feel like I'm here now actually working in Central Florida, in the Tampa area, and I've seen so much activity. I really want to give kudos to the Florida Democratic Party and to the National Coordinated Campaign for the kinds of activity that I'm seeing here in the central part of the state. I mean, we see a lot of get-out-the-vote happening in where I'm from, in Miami and in the southern part of the state, but a lot of activity happening here, and I'm hearing that's being mirrored in the northern part of the state. I think that Alex Sink will benefit from that. I think she's run a good campaign. I think she's kept her messaging very, very clean and clear, and I really hope that voters will understand what she has to offer our state.
Yes, well, I've got some more questions, but I'm going to take a chance that either Catherine or Tim pick up on it. Catherine, questions about the Florida governor's race?
Well, you know, there. I guess in the last couple of days there's been all – oh, the governor's race.
Oh. Governor's race.
I don't have any questions. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, I have about a million on that race, but I'm only going to ask one right now. You know, we've all heard about, you know, the deal with Bill Clinton. Is there any evidence that you can see that any Democratic voters are changing at the last minute and voting for Crist just because they feel that's the only way to beat Rubio?
I think, Tim, you're showing us just how confused voters are this cycle. What you're talking about is actually the United States Senate race.
That's the one I wanted to ask.
That's actually
about
the question I was going to ask, but I realized it was about the Senate.
Okay,
guys, I'm going to reset this thing as the host, that I'm going to ask another governor's race question. Then I'm going to let y'all lead on the Senate race since y'all got all the questions for that one. On the governor's race, I've noticed that a lot of the polling shows a pretty sizable undecided number. I've seen polls that where both candidates are in the low 40s, meaning the undecideds are close to 20% still. Oppa, what do you think? What do you think is explaining all of these late undecideds?
Well, I'll tell you, I think voters are as confused as we are. This is definitely a rough year for Democrats. I have enough balls to say that. I think at this time, we're kind of looking at an electorate that's a little confused. In 2008, they voted for change, and I'm just urging Democrats to guard that change this year. So many are waiting. They're waiting for jobs. They're waiting for health care reform to kick in. They're waiting for better education to hit the schools. And so what we're finding is an electorate who said, look, I went your way, I've trusted you, and now I'm not sure if I can be with you again. And so my message to any D's out there who are listening tonight is to stick the course, you know, stay the course. We changed the guard. Now we have to guard the change. The undecided, the reason why we have so many undecideds, they can be easily summed up in people want to understand what their vote means. And I think Democrats, more than anyone else this year, are a little confused.
I tell you what, Oppa, you may have heard that somewhere else, but I had not heard it. We change the guard, and I guard the chains. That it changed. That's poetic. Have y'all guys heard that one?
Yep, I heard. Yeah. I'd heard it.
You heard it. Okay, because if not, we were going to give Oppa credit. So, you know, so we didn't know if that was an original.
I would still take credit anyway, but I'm glad you like it, Dave.
You know, you found a good one on that one. I hadn't heard that sound clip anywhere. Well, go ahead and let's move into the Senate race. And Catherine, why don't you go ahead with your questions about the U.S. Senate race?
Well, I was going to ask the same question that Tim asked, is that with this sort of late entry of allegedly Bill Clinton coming in and trying to do some backroom, whatever. Do you think that it's going it could have an effect on that race? Not necessarily Bill Clinton's activities, but just in general, is there some idea that if people switch their votes to Chris, that we might be able to avoid Rubio?
I think everything Bill Clinton does has an effect on the party and the world at large.
He's
the king of all things. Look, here's the bottom line. I'm a little personally upset about that race. I feel like Kendrick Meek ran the kind of race that could have made him made his victory historical. And I support him, and I'm voting for Kendrick Meek. I want to just say that out loud. But I think the impact of not just the news, because it was on the cover of the Sarasota Times. I mean, it's everywhere. Miami Herald. In Florida, it had an impact. A bell rang, we heard it. And I think that at the end of the day, we have no factual basis for that argument. We don't know if President Clinton spoke to Kendrick Meek or asked him to get out of the race. We don't know. What I can tell you, as someone who has started off as an intern for Congresswoman Carrie Meek, is that the Meek family has a very close relationship with the Clinton family. And so it's hard for me, just knowing what I know, to believe that he would do that. President Clinton, just a few weeks ago, came out in support for fundraisers in addition to rallies for Kendrick. And so I just don't think it's true. Now, whether or not it'll have an impact, I think we can definitely count on it having some impact. Congressman Meek was having some difficulties in the polls early on, and it definitely doesn't help to have this kind of air of mystery out there about whether or not Ds should be supporting him. Do I think that enough votes will move from Congressman Meek to Charlie Crist? I don't know. What I can tell you is that Charlie Crist is not a Democrat. And I think Democrats need to remember that on Election Day.
Amen.
Tim, you got any questions on this, or you just want to amen the thing?
Yeah, no. Actually, I'm going to read the right line this time. I know it's pure speculation to even think about this thing, but I've been doing that anyway. What would a one-on-one race between Meek and Rubio have looked like? Do you think it would have mirrored the governor's race?
I think this year Democrats are really working hard to get their base out, and having a lot of D's stick to the party line has definitely been something that I've seen. I think in early voting, we saw that D's were voting D's. Here in Central Florida, where we're phone banking every day, and in the last 3 weeks we've called over 15,000 voters, more than anything, when I walk through my office, I hear volunteers saying, "Oh, you voted for the whole ticket? That's great." You know, again, kudos to the coordinated campaign. They've been doing their job. I think it would have. And I think that Charlie Crist playing the old switcheroo definitely had an impact on this race. I don't think it had a good impact for Congressman Meek, and I'm disappointed about it. I, again, just want to keep saying this as many times as I can. Democrats need to remember that Charlie Crist is no Democrat.
Mm-hmm. And is the feeling that at the end of this campaign that is the end of Charlie Crist as a politician in Florida?
I don't think so. I don't think if we wanted him to get out, he'd get out. You know, old Charlie has a lot of tricks up his sleeve, and I believe he'll stay in politics as long as he can walk on two legs.
Okay, thank you. David?
Yes, now what races would be open to him, and what party affiliation would be open to Governor Crist?
I've heard a good line from Congressman Meek. He said that Charlie Crist would run for anything, he'd be at anything, you know. I mean, he's doing whatever he can do to get a vote, and I think it's deplorable. I mean, it's not a good look If I was a Republican, I'd be mad at Charlie Crist. And as a Democrat, I don't want him.
Yeah. Well, I guess talking about future careers, let's say Congressman Meek does not, you know, is not successful on Tuesday. He's relatively young. The congressional district he vacated had some quality candidates, like one of our former guests, Dr. Moise. But then a lady that kind of has a gimmick to her, wears a cowboy hat. Apparently that's her logo. I'm just not a big person on gimmick politicians. What are the chances that he could come back and retake that seat?
I think Kendrick Meek could have his seat back whenever he wanted. The Meek family have done a fantastic job of connecting personally with voters. They've changed people's lives in District 17. Do I think he would do it? I don't think so. I don't think that's Congressman Meek's politics. He has a bright future ahead of him. Whether he wins this race or not, Congressman Meek will go on to do wonderful things. He can go on as a CNN contributor. Look, if Harold Ford has a future, Congressman Meek is in a good place. He's a good guy. He's got some smart business savvy, and I think he'll be just fine. Again, I'm voting for him. I support him. I think he's a great guy. I know him personally, and I've never known him to be anything but just honest and upright. He's a man who cares about people. I don't think it's his style to kind of go back to a seat that he just left. I think he served the people well in District 17. He knows that. The people there know that. And I think he has a bright future ahead of him, whatever he chooses to do.
Yes. Well, I guess there's so many races in Florida. I mean, you've got upwards of 20 congressional races. We couldn't begin to cover them all. Just kind of you tell us, as a person that lives in Florida, what are some of the hot races, be it the Congress, down ballot, statewide races, House or Senate seats? Just tell us a few little anecdotes.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I want to just talk through the ticket here. I mean, again, we've got Alex Sink, who's done a great job as CFO running for governor, Congressman Kendrick Meek, who's running for United States Senate, and he's got my vote. For lieutenant governor, we've got Rod Smith, who's, of course, Alex Sink's running mate. Dan Gelber is running for attorney general. A woman named Lorene Osley is running for the CFO seat, and a guy named Scott Maddox is running for commissioner of agriculture and consumer services. So, again, I just want to be excited for a moment as a Democrat about this strong Democratic ticket, and I can't talk enough about the kinds of work I've seen in the southern part of the state as well as in the central part of the state where I've been personally from the coordinated campaign. The national campaign is focused. I've seen blasts and emails from DFA, and I've gotten phone calls from President Clinton and from all kinds of good Democrats. I'm excited about what we did. I think we can credit our president for making sure that there's been a focus on guarding the change. You know, in South Florida, I'm looking here at a Miami-Dade County ballot. I think one of the hot races we can talk about just briefly is this race in District 25. There was a congressional District 25 in South Florida. There was a seat vacated by a Republican, Lincoln Diaz-Balart, and Joe Garcia, who ran in this seat 2 years ago, is back in the race, and he's running against David Rivera. Joe Garcia's campaign has been invested in by the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and I know that he was able to get his base out. He's raised a ton of money, millions plus, and so I think that's a hot race to watch. In a lot of places in South Florida, you have kind of old politics as usual. You've got, like, Ileana Ross-Layton, who's a Republican in District 18. She's still there. You know, there are so many. This is just kind of a busy year. There are so many different seats. I'm trying to keep my eyes on the statewide ticket. I think that what happens statewide is going to dictate what happens in these smaller seats, except for, of course, where we have Democratic strongholds like Alcee Hastings' seat and the District 17 seat where Kendrick Meek was. Other than that, I think we just keep our eyes on that U.S. Senate race. That's definitely the hottest race in the state. And we all have to keep our fingers crossed for our current CFO, who's now running for governor, Alex Sink.
Yes, I mean, because that's a biggie, because if Texas stays in Republican hands, you look at some of the other races in the Midwest that looks like they might fall into Republican hands, having a governor and a Democratic governor in Florida can help us in redistricting, because Florida is going to be one of only, I guess, two to three states that are going to pick up two congressional seats. So that's big. I guess we probably have you on sometime down the road, but you can preview if you want to. Where do you think those two congressional districts may be most heavily based?
You know, I think it's going to happen right in South Florida. I really do. There's just been so much growth down there. I know for sure somewhere in between 18, 25, and 21, they're going to have to create something new. I'm not sure where the other one's going to fall, but I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere in South Florida. I can't give you 100%, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be one created in between 21, 25, and 18 down there in the bottom of the state. Where the other one is, I don't know. I'm not sure where the most growth has happened, but I know it's going to happen in South Florida.
Well, that sounds like a Democratic pickup possibility, so we'll be excited to hear more about that. Well, Appa, you just stay busy the next 2 days, guarding the change.
Well, thank you so much. And Catherine and Tim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, well, I've got a good little report from Florida. We were kind of talking about Georgia, being that that's our home base for all three of us. I think we got to really give it a little more talk tonight. We've talked the governor's race. You know, the poll that came out by Mason-Dixon, the latest one that was in all the papers, put on by their media service, showed it a 47-40, I think Mons was to 6. It left 7% undecided. I mean, the big key is, if those numbers are accurate, an accurate sampling, how does that 7% split? Catherine, what do you think?
I hate to say it, but I think we might be looking at a runoff. I think Mr. Mons might get a piece of that. I think Roy Barnes, Governor Barnes, might get a piece. And then I think Deal is pretty steady right now. So, unfortunately, I think we might have a runoff.
Yeah, Tim, what is your thoughts on that 7%?
I think Deal wins 52-44 with 4% for Mons. I think most of, if there is any undecided, I think most of it breaks to Deal. And even if we do somehow have a runoff, I don't think it'll matter.
Yeah, I think the key is Mons has to be at least 6. And that would have him outperforming almost every Libertarian that's ever run for governor.
No Libertarian has ever gotten over 3% in the governor's race. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute.
Yes, and so he would have to really get a big chunk because, I mean, the poll that I just keep coming back to, and I think we discussed it last week, was that one that gave us the crosstabs. I think it was Landmark Communications, but also Insider Advantage did one that gave us the crosstabs. It showed that 51% of white voters in Georgia will only vote for Republican.
Right.
And then what was the number that got added on top of that, Tim? It was in the
25% more.
Mostly Republicans. So it's almost like if Roy Barnes and Nathan Deal were running a running race, Nathan Deal would have to run about 30 yards, and Roy Barnes would have to run about 100. So it doesn't start out as a fair race. So even if it's close, we may have run a better race, but it's almost like we were set up to lose from the get-go.
Right. In the latest round of polling, 62% of white voters are saying they're voting for Deal. Amongst voters, only, and Catherine alluded to this earlier, only 16% said that integrity mattered in the governor's vote. 60% said issues. And most voters agree with Deal on the issues. They score on immigration, on health care, on making President Obama, making it a referendum on him. So, you know, I'd like to see something different than what I see. But I do not see a combination that propels Roy Barnes to victory in this race.
Yeah, but it's just so vexing because you can say on the issues, but then, okay, what's one of the big things President Obama's done? The stimulus plan. You can't tell me that all these teachers, and there's probably a slew of them, they're going to vote for Nathan Deal. They didn't like it when their job was either A, saved, or a bunch of those furlough days were repealed and it went back into their paycheck. You can't tell me these homebuyers like
Republican State Representative Steve Davis don't like it when they have these foreclosure programs where they can actually go in and, you know, make the houses livable again and then resell them so the neighborhoods don't fall apart, even if they do it illegally. They don't like those kind of programs. That's why it's just such a convoluted deal, because so many people benefit for Democratic policies. And I do think Nathan Deal is a pawn in this game. He's not a very good candidate. I don't think he's that sleazy. I think he's kind of inept. That's the sense I've gotten. Catherine, of the two, what do you think? He's more sleazy or more inept?
I think he's inept, but I think that it's I think we're focusing on the wrong thing. It's not what's wrong with Nathan Deal. It's what's right about the Democrats, and we have not heard that. There has been no – I mean, do you know what Roy Barnes' ideas are for solving the job problem, solving the transportation problems? All we hear from the Democratic Party and from the Democratic Governors Association is how evil Nathan Deal is. And people are tired of hearing that. That we want to – you know, I have said, I'm sure, a million times on this show – I really want to vote for someone. I don't want to vote against the other guy. And I think until we realize that that's what people are looking for, that they're looking for a vision and a leader, I'm not saying we should never do negative ads, but I think we have to incorporate them into a message that also includes some you know, concrete ideas about how we solve these problems.
Yeah, and I'm maybe one of the few, but I actually know some of the things Roy Barnes is going to do for jobs. I know he's going to go in through a lot of these state buildings and use state workers or hire new workers and make the buildings greener, which apparently will create, you know, tens of thousands of jobs, what that plan said. I know that's one thing he wants to do. There was another plan that he proposed, and it's left me again. But I know he has a better transportation plan, which that'll be construction jobs. Oh, I know one more Democratic idea, and Roy Barnes has latched on to this, but we heard about this thing over a year ago, and that's point-of-sale sales tax collection, which Virgil Flood, a Democrat from Fayette County, proposed that's supposed to save, what, $1 billion? And it was proven to save hundreds of millions in Alabama, and we have a much bigger sales economy. I mean, those are some things that are going to help us that he's proposed, and I have no idea.
None of that's
going
to matter Tuesday, guys. You do understand
that. Yeah,
because
it's too late. It's too late. We should have been talking about that a year ago.
Right.
Well, the thing with refitting jobs he mentioned months ago, months, maybe even a year ago.
Yeah, but how many times did you see that ad versus the, you know, the evil Nathan Deal ads? I mean, I love my Democrats, but I think we've really lost our vision on how to elect us.
I know a long time ago he had to do more positive polling when he was stuck, or positive ads, when he was stuck in the low 40s and can't rise above 43 for anything. You know that he's got a perception problem that he is yet to work on. I mean, the whole thing's been holding Nathan Deal under, and then maybe, you know, hoping he can win overtime, if you will. We got about 3 to 4 minutes left. There's a slew of down-ballot races, including the U.S. Senate race, which I guess technically is not even down-ballot. If we're going to win, let's say we lose the governor's race, the top of the ticket. If we're going to win one of these races, which one's it going to be and why? Catherine?
I think it's Darrell Hicks for labor commissioner, because he has been very effective in reaching out across the state. His performance in the debate that I saw was impeccable. He's a very well-respected former executive with Atlanta Gaslight. He's got a very good reputation, and I think he's a great candidate, and he has a lot of labor support that's really out there working for him. So he's got a good team. I think he's our best chance.
Yeah, I do like the jobs on his sign, but the only problem is about debate performances. Catherine, other than people that are members of the state Democratic or Republican Party, I could give you $1 for every person that knew that he did better in the debate.
and I bet I wouldn't even run out of money, and I've got about $20-something in my pocket. Now, unfortunately, nobody watches debates anymore. I don't know what's happened, but, I mean, and they don't even get reported on.
I mean, there are other things
happen.
That he's been,
they get reported on
he's been doing a lot of things. It's not just the debate performance. He's been working across the state for a long time, and he's got a really good network of people, and he's, he's our best chance, in my opinion. You ask my opinion.
Okay, well, yeah, Tim, what do you think is our best chance?
The state school superintendent's race is a 10-point race right now. I think Martin is the one down-ballot candidate that has a real chance to force a runoff in his race because even his opponent, Barge, is like at 39%. There's a lot of undecideds in the race, and unlike a lot of other races, we can actually run against the Republican the former Republican office holder in this race, who, as we know, had her issues, and I think that's easily our most winnable race.
And Tim, I was thinking the same way you were. I should have jumped ahead of you, said it had been original, but if you look at South Carolina, the only race we're winning there was education. It's the only race they held over there. It's the first one we lost, ironically, but I tell you, I don't think there are a lot of folks in Georgia that think, even Republican-leaning folks that think that the Republican Party's done anything with education. I think a lot of Republican-leaning voters can see the cuts that have happened. Unfortunately, I think you have to change that at the legislative and the gubernatorial office level, and the state school superintendent is either a manager or then has a bully pulpit, but they don't have the power to restore the funding. But I do believe that is our best chance, and hopefully we're wrong on a lot of things, and these polls were just dead wrong, and they had samples, because that's my sincere hope, that you know, it comes up, and it's like out of nowhere, the Democrats in this state and others win races that nobody ever thought they could, but we just don't have valid data to support that presumption other than hope. Yeah.
Right.
Well, next week, our show won't be a lot of predictions. It'll be a lot of analysis. Hopefully it'll be keys to the game victory celebration, but it could be the autopsy. we don't know. John Kennedy once said, you know, of course, a loss has a thousand morticians. So that's unfortunately what we'll be doing. We just don't know yet. So everybody, just like Matt told us early in the show, go vote. And we'll be watching election returns, in some cases partying. And see y'all next week on the Kudzu Vine.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.